speaker. Please welcome Trish from San Clemente.
Hi, my name is Trish, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
I would like to thank Trevor and Tim for inviting us here tonight. Thank you so much. What a great, enthusiastic meeting. We're having a good time. I like the joke. That was pretty fun. I'm going to like text you next week and find out what the next one is. And I would like to thank my keynote speaker, Lauren. What a treat. What a good job. It was nice sitting at dinner. We were all sitting there, and all of a sudden, the lights like, gosh, you know, Trish and then Lauren and then Megan and then Mason. It's just like, I don't know, it's like exactly what's supposed to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you come in and you get some help, and then you get to help the next person that comes in. And then slowly over time, you get to watch these beautiful transformations that happen in people. And it really is a blessing that you have no idea that you're going to find when you get here, right? I just wanted to like stop drinking, you know, maybe for that week. I don't know. I don't even realize I was really investing in something big, you know. But anyways, and you know, I have a couple of my sponsors here, and some newer girls here, and it's just a huge blessing. And I'm so grateful. My sobriety day is May 11th, 2000. If I make it to May, I'll have 25 years. I got sober on Mother's Day, probably the best gift I ever gave my mom. I don't know if she was excited that I was getting sober, but she was probably excited I wasn't coming to her house on Mother's Day. And I spent that Mother's Day, you know, in yet another psych ward. I think it was about my seventh of that century, you know. And and for the first time I got to walk in and be completely honest, you know, with what was going on. And for that, I'm ever grateful. My sponsor is Michelle. My sponsor before her was Julie St. John. So I've had some really strong sponsors in my lives and people that took Alcoholics Anonymous seriously and are still a big part of my life and big examples of the program. And people that I could hear more than I could, you know, hear myself. Chris Warhoff and I were both sober together. Our first sponsor, like, she would tell us to do these crazy things. And we like never even questioned it. Like, I don't know who, like, I thought was like the AA police were going to come and like get me or something. I don't know. But it never even occurred to me to say no. Once I came here, I was like all the way in, you know, and I'm grateful. And I always have been. I'll just tell you a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what I'm like today. One of the things I am today is sober, which I, like I said, I'm very grateful for. I grew up in California, state of California. I did not grow up in California like we know it. I grew up out in the Mojave Desert. I grew up on a naval base out there. Why they put a Navy base in the Mojave Desert was one of my first questions. But it was a Naval Works test station. My dad was a physicist out there. And my mom was a school teacher, and I was the oldest of five. And it was like this big Navy center out in the middle of nowhere. You know, we were it was a really tight-knit community, and people took care of each other. Everybody's dad worked over at the lab, and they were some kind of scientist. And education was like really highly reinforced there. Change your life, get educated. I didn't know really the educated. My mom should just set me Alcoholics Anonymous right then. We'll skip kindergarten, bridging AA, you know, that would have probably been a blessing for me. But, really, I was a strong swimmer. This is how nurturing my mother was. She was like, I don't swim. If you don't learn, I'm not coming in after you, you know. So we all did learn to swim. And I think if you would have met me about my sophomore or my junior year, you would have thought, yeah, she's going to college. She'll probably get a scholarship in swimming, you know, good reader on the yearbook, all that kind of stuff. And that all changed. It all changed when I was about 16 or 17. I went to Dwight Scott's house and I drank some Boone's Farm for Annie Greenspring. I don't know. I had a lot of that Schlitz malt liquor, all that good stuff back then. But that night it was wine. And, you know, there's a guy, I think it's like the third or fourth story in the big book, but I think he started like AA in Canada Day, but he says from the day he started drinking, he was addicted. And, you know, eventually towards the end, he was just drinking to erase the debacle from the night before. And that's what my drinking was like. I have something in my system that as physically addicted to alcohol, I crave it. It still scares me to think that somewhere I could accidentally pick up a drink that would have alcohol in it, because I know my body would crave it from the minute it would hit there. I was physically addicted to that. So the minute I drank anything, you know, you didn't know where I was going to end up for the night. What you didn't know was that I wasn't going to stop drinking until, you know, I passed out, went to jail, you know, ran into a car, you know, I don't know, went home with your boyfriend, something that stopped, went into a blackout and then whatever. But it was, I wasn't going to stop after one or two drinks ever. And so I, it was like the line black cross strike in the beginning. I mean, I stood up that night drunk and did my fifth grade tap dance for the, you know, the group, and, you know, finished out the wine, and they had to drag me home and like leave me in the bushes, you know, and that was it from the start. And, you know, but, and, you know, luckily, you know, back then, you know, you'd like to go on your test for college and put all your GPA and all that stuff in. Everything I'd done up to my junior year, like, got me into school the next year, because by my senior year, I was a drunk. My parents couldn't wait to get me out of town. You know, I'd show up at a swim meet and swim my butterfly race and puke and go in the bathroom, have a cigarette, maybe show back up for my freestyle race, puke again, you know. I mean, go out and get drunk afterwards, you know, maybe crawl home. I'd come home like drunk and sleep in my swimsuit so I'd make it to the swim meet, you know, and all bets were off applying for a scholarship or anything, you know. And I went to San Diego State for college. Great school for an alcoholic. I did not really know that. The big joke is that I had no idea Mexico was down there. Well, Mojave Desert, you're like out there, you know. I mean, you know, one of the things about where I grew up is it was such a wonderful community. It was really like tight knit there, you know. And if you got in trouble anywhere in town, your parents knew long before you got home. The whole neighborhood knew. That was like, I don't know, like the bat wave went out or something, you know. But, and people took care of you, you know. And I never found that experience again until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to AA, I felt that kind of love, you know. I would maybe do things wrong, and my sponsor would know before I'd even told her. How'd she find out, you know? I mean, that kind of stuff. But I found that same community here, and I knew it when I walked in. I'm like, ooh, I've had this before in my life, you know. And I'm grateful Alcoholics Anonymous answers that. So I got down to San Diego State, found out that Mexico was right next to San Diego State. I had taken 6 years of French. I didn't know why, neither did my mom. But anyways, she told me I should take geography maybe. And, you know, there I was, you know, down in the long bar. I joined a sorority down there. I was the sorority member that was wet in the bed, you know. And, you know, clothes in the bar. I remember my girlfriend Jane and I, we used to collect like a dollar from everybody. We'd buy $1.99, 12 packs of Luckies, you know, that had little puzzles on them. And then everybody would drink two or three. We'd be like lightweights, you know, and we'd drink them all night long. And I was just a drunk sorority member. My freshman year, we had this like steak and bean night. And if you got like a 3.5 or above grade point average, you got to eat steak. If you were below that, you ate beans. I not only got to eat steak, I won the like freshman pledge grade point average. And everybody's like, her? You know, like I didn't represent that, you know, in the way that I was partying and hanging out. You know, but like I said, I didn't start drinking until I was about a senior. By the time I was leaving from college, this is just one of many stories. I was kind of the alcoholic that was out there. Everybody knew I was an alcoholic long before, you know, I was coming here. But I went down to San Felipe with a fraternity that I was engaged to a guy in the fraternity. And, you know, we'd been drinking all day long. They wanted to go home. We were in San Felipe, and I didn't want to go home. We were up on a second story bar, and my brother-in-law grabbed me and put me on his shoulders and took a step forward, and I flipped off his shoulders, off the balcony, under the pavement, you know, and fractured my skull, black eyes, just, you know, a mess, you know. So they... And I had a very, you know, kind, loving group. They're like, oh my God, she's going to get us arrested. They threw me in the van, you know. And brought me back up to San Diego, and I ended up hospitalized, you know, with a fractured skull. And I was there for a couple of days, and the doctor came back. I was really upset. It was spring break, and I was in a hospital.
But,
you know, I don't think I knew a lot about pain meds, or I might have been a little more excited about being there. But
I can drive you, but I have like another 6 months of blower thing.
So the doctor came in, and he goes, "We really need to know how."
Do you want me to show you how to use it?
Is. So we're gonna.
I'll drive you.
Our friend.
I don't mind.
And we're gonna have you.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm not doing offices over and get a scan. And so my girlfriend came, and I left the hospital in my hospital gown with a little opening in the back. And I've got black eyes, you know.
I'm gonna make. I bought these at the grocery outlet.
And the guy came back and goes, "Yeah, it's fractured big time." And I said, "You're gonna spend some time in the hospital." So I leave.
They have a whole section of Navitas.
And I said.
Yeah, they do. I'm gonna make overnight.
It's Friday. I'm not going back. We're not going straight back to that hospital. There I am, you know, a couple of days after going off a two-story balcony, you know, and in that hospital garb, and we party it down until we
Order
close
it and
that
then
place
just get my
down, and then
slippers
she
on and
takes me
stuff.
back to the hospital. You know, I could care less that I'm in my hospital garb or whatever, you know. So that's how I drink a couple of years after I, you know, picked up the first drink. I mean, that's a story among many, you know, but it exemplifies how I drink. You know, I went on, I graduated from San Diego State, you know, and luckily I was a good reader, so that, you know, I did like to read, and I got through school and I started teaching school because you guys need me. And, you know,
I made
my
some
grandmother had been a teacher and an author, and my mom had been a teacher, and he's the one
rigatoni meat
who taught
sauce.
me to be Yale, and I'm
And let
teaching
it, I'll
school,
put it in the
and I'm
fr
a drunk school teacher, you know. I mean, I'm out drinking at night thinking I'm going to work sober, but I think a lot of times when you close the bar and get home at three and
Sober.
you go to work at seven, you might still be drunk. I
No
don't
big
know.
deal.
I'm sleeping in the coat closet there. And I got a DUI one time when I was teaching. So the whole Orange County Jail and I are trying to find a substitute for me the next day, you know, calling from the payphone over there. Everybody like traded in their
Sure.
calls. You know, it was pretty crazy. About that time, my
You can
brother
get a better way.
some troubles also. My parents went out of town for a long cross-country trip, and he came to stay with us. And while he was at work, he passed away. We think that he took something while he was a security guard at a hospital. And so I got a call at like 6 in the morning that my brother had passed away, and my sister and I had to go down to the morgue and identify him. And I had to tell my parents over the phone that their son was dead, and they needed to come back home. So I think I was like 21 at the time. He was not quite 18. I think he was 17 years old. And it just really set up a real difference in my drinking. I think I had two major thoughts going on for a long time. I felt like my mom should not have gone on that
Well, let me
vacation.
know.
The
I'm not
person
doing
was having
anything.
trouble. She should have canceled her vacation, mortgaged her.
Just order it. There's a little baking powder.
And I shouldn't go to the Angel game. And finally, I got talked into it. And you know what happened? I got to the Angel game, had a few beers, had a few shots. I think I kind of remember a disco ball somewhere. So we must have gone to a bar. And then the next thing I remember, Jackie's out waking me up on the front lawn, and she's like, "Your principal's on the phone. You didn't show up to work today, and you had to bring your class inside." And I'm like, I knew I shouldn't have gone to the Angel game, you know. I because I knew. I just knew. Once I went there, I would probably have a drink, and I didn't know I'd end up in the bush. I mean, I was lucky I didn't end up in jail that time, but I just knew it wasn't a good idea. It was never a good idea for me to go and have a drink. And but eventually I really started working really hard, and my husband and I kind of took it down. We had a son that was the same age, and we bought a new house. It became like the I don't know, the Little League coach and the PTA president, and I'm winning Teacher of the Year, and I get to go to the White House. I get to meet the Bill Clinton and Al Gore. You know, I get to sit in front and, you know, shake hands with them for the award we won. I'm like, wow, where am I going to go from here? And where I went was to my first psych ward, one of many. I think that was my, you know, I think I was hospitalized in Charter Hospital that year. I had a roommate who thought she was a bird who was trying to fly out the window. You know, and Because I kept letting myself get taken into sideboard after sideboard because I didn't want to tell the truth. What had really happened in our house was my stepson had decided to come live with us, and his mom had said to us, "Well, I'd rather not go back to court. You can stop paying child support, but I don't really want to go into court and talk about it." And we had attorney after attorney tell us, "You need to go to court and change that child support arrangement." We're like, "Ah, we ever end up there, we'll just tell them what happened." Well, what happened was the son got older, and she came back and filed for all of that child support because we hadn't. And she would call us up and go, "I know it's not fair, and it's not what I promised, but it's legal, and you guys owe me a lot of money." And I just, I'm like in the middle of like winning all these awards, and I remember reading that line in the book, like we cannot afford a justified resentment. I mean, literally, I'd be standing in the grocery store line, and some stranger would say to me, like, "Hi, lady, how are you today?" "Oh my God, my husband's ex-wife is suing us. We're gonna lose our house. It's gonna foreclose. I'm gonna lose my 9 jobs." And they'd be like, "I don't even know you." This was like, making small talk. But I was like, just like so angry. And we were working all these extra jobs and paying attorneys, and it was horrible. And my son got put on Ritalin at the time because he started having issues, and so they thought maybe he had ADD. And so we don't really know because he never got to take his medicine. His mom picked up the prescription from the pharmacy. And I'm like, Ritalin. Exiting. I don't know. I'd like a little energy. I'd like to lose 10 pounds. I'm working a lot of extra jobs. I would take his pills apart and like stick cold medicine in it. And then he and I watched a special on TV about how kids were selling their Ritalins at school, and kids were like chopping it up and snorting it. And we're like, who would do that? The answer was mom. I'd gone back to the doctor. I'm like, what? My whole family has ADD. Like, we all need a triple cover prescription. I mean, we're like out there. And pretty soon I'm like, that stuff is strong. It's not like you're buying it off the street. I mean, I know nowadays you're always worried like about there being fentanyl in there, but back then we were worried that there was like baby powder in it or it wasn't going to be strong enough. But that real stuff was strong. And I started staying up like a clock, and I'm drinking, and I'm an alcoholic, and I take a leave from work because you can't stay up 4 nights in a row and go to work and try to function. And I'm all over the place. I mean, I tried for a little bit. My poor kids were like, I'd give them like 9,000 projects to do, I try to correct, and I write an essay on them. It was just really bad. And so I took a leave of absence. I injured my neck because I was staying up all night. And I was like moving our furniture around. My husband and I were starting to get in a lot of fights, and kids were getting in a lot of trouble. And one night, and then I'm like this, I'm a school teacher of the year. I met the president. We're getting in a fight. I call the police. They come out to our house. And one night, the police came out. My husband, I'm covered in bruises. No, not for my husband. I'm covered in bruises because I've been moving furniture all over the place. He's upset with me because I've taken the refrigerator apart because I'm convinced it's listening to me. He's like, "No one would listen to you, Trisha. No one trusts me. There's no microphone there. No one wants to hear anything you have to say." And I lied to the police. I'm like, "He hit me. I'm covered in bruises." And then my husband made the mistake of saying, "Someone should hit her." And the police said, "Well, someone in this house is going to go to jail tonight." "Sir, I think it's you." So my husband got taken to jail. He was also a teacher. He got put on administrative leave at his school. So he's down there working in the district office. There's a pending charge against him for what I've accused him of. And they went upstairs. My son did not happen to be there that night, but my stepson was there that night, and they took him to Orangewood. And they found my sons were upstairs selling marijuana, basically, out their window. That's we had gone from being like PTA president and swim team, all the stuff that we really didn't know that our kids were doing that out the window because I'm nuts. I'm really crazy. And I'm calling my poor mom would call me and she'd be like, "Are you okay?" And my brother said one time, I called her back several times. I called her back and I'm like, "Ask me if I'm okay. When I was 2, you did this." And the answering machine would wear out. And then I call back, "When I was 5, you did this." And then the answering machine goes on. And I call back, "When I was 12, you did this." So my brother comes home. He's brought all his friends from college in Iowa home. They've all been out having pizza. And they come in and they turn on the answering machine. And he said, "Just that. Alcoholism, the anger, the slurring of my words just came out over that answering machine." And my parents are like, we're done. You know, we are done. And about that time, my dad got diagnosed with cancer. We got told that he had about 2 years left to live. And this is what I'm doing in my house, you know. And so my husband went to jail. My son went to Orangewood. And my family didn't come back home. They were done. Done. And I decided to go to Cook's Corner. And I invited the bar home for a drink. And they stayed for like 5 years. I mean, we weren't done then, you know, we were not done then. We have, you know, we take it to the end. And they came home and they moved in the house where I've raised my kids, where I've been involved in my neighborhood. I've been ski trips and family trips and neighborhood bar kids. And now I've got tweakers in and out of the house. You know, if I pass out for a couple of days, they have a garage sale and they still have my stuff. You know, I'm just like up, you know, drinking, staggering around. I mean, the night day is going on outside. I remember they bought us like these, one of those things, scanners. So we're all sitting around the living room listening to where the police are in case they come to our house. I'm like, why are they? I don't know why they're coming to our house. But, you know, just, I mean, this has become my life, you know, a big, 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 big distance from when I was like meeting the president of the United States. And my dad would come down like every so often. He's getting thinner and thinner. He's sicker and sicker. And he's calling the police a couple times. He turned off all the utilities in my house, got all these people to move out. And then I bring him back in again, you know. And then I got to be his last Thanksgiving, and I called my mom, and I'm like, I'm coming home. I want to spend Dad's last Thanksgiving with him. And so I take a couple of Ritalin or whatever so I can be wide awake to drive home. And then I'm too wide awake, so I better take a drink. And then I have too many more drinks, and then I need something to wake myself up again. And then it's Christmas. Now I didn't make it home for Thanksgiving, you know. And then I'm calling, doing the same thing. And then the next thing I know, it's March. My mom called me and said, Dad's in the hospital. They're probably going to do last rites tonight. And I haven't made it home for Thanksgiving. I haven't made it home for Christmas. My dad is a wonderful man. You know, he didn't deserve that. And I was the only kid that did not. You know, my sister and brother-in-law are there. They're helping change diapers when he's not getting at the very end. And I can't even show up there. And nobody's upset that I'm not there. So I kind of got escorted home about that time. And that was in 2000. I remember my dad just wanted to live to see the year 2000. And he barely got to do that. And I walked into my mom's living room, and all my brothers and sisters are there, and my aunts and uncles and my grandparents, and they're laughing, and they're putting a video together, and they're telling family stories, and they're, you know, putting posters together for my dad, and the sunlight's coming to my mom's kitchen. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what happened to me? Like, I hadn't seen daylight on purpose in like 5 years, you know. I mean, I didn't know it was like the day to the next day. I mean, I had literally just, you know, gone crazy. I was adding medication to my system, and my alcoholism was inducing a psychosis. And I still, to this day, I'll go back and just count those years. Like, it was literally that long that I abandoned my children, my family, my career, everything. You know, my school district offered me my job over and over again. And in between there, once in a while, I go out and have a surgery, you know, so I can like add some pain pills to the whatever, you know. Remember this dentist telling me, oh, and you had a gum grafting. I go, I didn't have gum grafting done. He goes, oh, yes, you did. Got about three. I can see him in here. You know, I'm like, oh, I had surgery that I don't even remember, you know. And I stayed through the funeral. We got to say goodbye to my dad. And then I was kind of escorted out of there and sent out of town. And you know, I went home, and, you know, I come home. These people have all been in my house. You know, they like stolen half my stuff, you know, anything that was left, and all that stuff still going on in my house. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I called my husband, and I begged him to take me back. My husband, in the meantime, you know, way back in the beginning when he left, he got assigned to anger management, which was probably good. He was kind of angry. So I thought they could have been a good place. But, you know, he changed a lot during that time. We had a AA club. We had opened a little consignment store that we weren't able to run because we were not in a good place, but there was an AA club right next door, the Raymond Way Club. And my husband and I used to fight in that parking lot. We'd get really drunk and fight. I remember he'd say, I'm leaving you. And I'd jump on the hood of his car. Don't leave me. And he'd drive in the parking lot and try to bounce me off. And the AA club was upstairs, and they'd be like, don't go, girl. We got to stop. So anyways, so my husband went to anger management, He started going to that AA club, and he would go in there and just cry, save my wife, save my wife. Thank God they were, you know, it was an open meeting, and thank God they were kind to him there. And they're like, sir, we think you need to take care of yourself. Maybe you need some Al-Anon. Maybe. But they'd take him over to Baker Square and you know, have breakfast with him. And how can we help your family? How can we help your wife? You know, are you sure you're not an alcoholic? Why are you there? You know, why? And I was like, oh my God, he's joined a cult because he left. You know, he went to anger management. He went and got counseling. And when my dad died, I called him up and I said, my dad's died. I need you to take me back. I don't know what to do. I'm all by myself. And he said, probably the most profound words anybody's ever said to me. He said, I don't know, Trish. It's not that I don't love you. I do love you, but it's peaceful without you. He said, I probably have maybe 20 years left to live, maybe 25 if I stay away from you. You know, he said, I'm sorry that you didn't get sober to say goodbye to your dad. He was a good man. I'm sorry for what you've become. He said, but I really don't want you to call me again. I don't want anything to do with you, and I wish you well. And he hung up, you know. I had never ever experienced that with him. I mean, the poor man, somewhere along the line, I'd always been able to reel him back in. So that anger management, that Al-Anon, that AA club upstairs, oh, they brainwashed him, you know? And I just wasn't the same since I'd been to my house. Like something, I think like a little window had opened when I was there. So I went about 6 weeks with those people in this house. I couldn't get high. I couldn't get drunk. You know, I was like, I couldn't believe my dad was gone. It was like, seemed like they told me he was going to die and then he was dead. And 5 years had gone by, you know, while I had wasted all that time. And so in the middle of the night, I'm like, I know what's going on. My husband has a girlfriend. That's why he won't take me back. I had gone down like all peeped out, tried to buy a car. And my husband had moved to a secret place. But when I went and tried to buy this car, which I didn't have any money, I don't think I could finish filling out the forms, but they printed out a like a TRW report and it had his new address on it. So I knew where he was living, even though he didn't know I knew where he was living, or he would have moved, trust me. But so I went down in the middle of the night. I'm like, he's got a girlfriend. I'm going to confront them. Like I hadn't even had any business to be doing that. And I sat out there all night long, you know, and that was hard. You know, I was like restless. And what happened was that the guardman came in the morning about 5 o'clock. Good morning, ma'am. What are you doing here? And I had that, you know, I don't know where you had your spiritual awakening. Mine was in the bush with the gardener. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing here? And I had by that time been through 7 cycles. I had every time that it had gotten too far in that house, I think the police didn't know what to do with me. They like never really had, you know, trouble with our house. And we'd lived there for a long time before I went crazy. So they just kept taking me to the psych ward. I liked the psych ward. You know, they had a cigarette lighter on the wall, you know, and they had cute guys there, kind of. You know, they were a little messed up, but they were, you know, cute, you know, they had good medicine, you know, and, you know, that place had kind of become a comfortable place. And I got my car. I thanked the gardener. Have a good day. And I got my car and I drove back to the South Coast Hospital at the time. I've been there several times. I mean, I've been hospitalized. My roommate was getting like shock treatments, you know. I mean, one time I was like, I made a suicide attempt that was pretty intense. They kept me there for like 35 days. And I went back and I called my mom, and that was Mother's Day. And I said, you know what? I've been lying to you. I've been making the whole family, because I was really like my family. I'm having a nervous breakdown and you're the reason. You know, I don't know what I thought they'd done, but I had created all this stuff that I was sure that they'd done. And lo and behold, I find myself in the big book where I'm going through all this, you know, delusion and flight from reality, all the things that I had become. And I said, Mom, I'm an alcoholic, and I added some other substances to me, which made me become crazy. And I'm going to tell them that and see if they'll get me help. And she said, is that better? And I'm like, I don't even know if it's better. It's the truth, though, you know, and to like tell the truth, you know. And they weren't sure what to do with me because I looked pretty psych ward-ish, but they, you know, they put me on the Genesis side. And I mentioned this girl that I met. She was, I walked into this group and she was a math teacher where I taught school. And she's like, oh my God, Tricia, where have you been? You like disappeared. You went out on a leave. And we never saw you again. She goes, are you here to get sober? And I'm like, I am. And she said, so am I. As a matter of fact, I'm going to read my 4th step to the group today. Why don't you come sit with me? You know, and I thank that lady because I would have never stayed there. you know, open class somebody that I taught with. I was so ashamed, you know, that I was doing that kind of stuff. Like, how would I ever go back? I was sure all these psych ward visits, if they were, all that stuff was probably in my medical records. If I ever went back, they would find it out if they gave me medical insurance. And so I sat and listened to her to share her 4-step today. She's this little quiet, math-looking teacher. And she was the Dickens, and I stayed there with her through the treatment center, and I got sober, you know, and that was my sobriety date, and I kept it. And about, I don't know, 6 months later, I was at the Newport Club, and I saw yet another girl that I had taught school with there, and I asked her how Jennifer was doing, and she said, a couple months ago on Easter Sunday, she had dinner with her kids, and when they left, she hung herself. She relapsed. She never got sober, you know. And I just want to remember her because I know she's why I'm here, because she shared her story that day, and because I walked in and saw her, you know, one alcoholic talking to another, and because she was in my profession, I didn't feel shamed. I didn't feel anything. And I'm so sad that she didn't make it. And I'm so grateful that I'm here and that she was there when I came in that day. And I got out of treatment. I was in treatment for a while. They gave me like a second dose and a third dose and a fourth dose. Nobody was really sure I was ready to go home. But I'll never forget, I was in sober living. And I could tell the sober living mom, I could tell she was on speed. I mean, I know what that looks like. I'm calling my family. I'm like, my sober living mom is on speed. It's not good for me to live with this. And they're like, we don't believe you. You know, I mean, and she was. She got fired a couple of weeks after I left. But I mean, like, I had to stay there during that because I had cried wolf too many times, you know, and I had to stay. And they're like, oh, no one trusts me. How interesting, you know. And I went home. Those people were all still in my house. The police came out and kicked them out. My son came and moved in with me. And luckily, my treatment center, Cornerstone, had taken me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And luckily, I knew where that 6 a.m. meeting was, the one that watched me pop in the hood of my husband's car. And I started going over there. I didn't know what to do. The police came out and gave those people 30 days to get out of my house. So I had to live with them for 30 days, you know, in my house, using all that kind of stuff. And I went to the meeting. I remember crying in that meeting where there was a lady there from New York. She's like, quit crying and start praying. She handed me this book, and Julie St. John became my sponsor. And she goes, you're going to start going to the Wednesday night meeting with me, which was in, oh, it's like up in Hollywood, you know, the Pacific Group. I can't remember the city it was in right now, but it was like a long ways away. I lived in San Clemente. I'm like, it's Wednesday. That's like all night long. I have family. And she's like, well, none of them are speaking to you. So get in the car. And I got in the car. I did. I left my house at 3 and I got home at midnight. I drove in the car with Moldy and Sharon and Julie and Chris Boroff. Chris and I sit next to you. Oh my God, I got to drive with these old ladies that are sober, blah, 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 you know. And I had no idea that I was like sitting in a car with the grace of God. Those ladies would tell us, like, maybe you should open the mail that's been sitting at your house. This tweaker in the house, and for 5 years, she like filed my mail in like a miracle. My house, you know, maybe you should go through that mail and throw it out. Maybe you should clean your car. Maybe you should, you know, call your mom today. Maybe you should send a birthday card to somebody in your family. I mean, just little things that they told us to do, and slowly but surely. And then we would come back to the car the next week so proud because I washed my car. Yay! The whole car would cheer, you know. I started doing my steps. And I remember at Thanksgiving, it took about a year almost. I got so amazed. So at Thanksgiving, my family invited me to come to Thanksgiving. And Julie said, well, here's the rules. We're going to drive up in your car to Pacific Group. You're going to read me your 4-step part of it. I'll go home with Ron, and you can go out the 14 and go back to home. You're on your 4-step, so I don't want you to go home, and I don't want you to brag about AA and how it's changed you and all this stuff that you've done. I want you to go to at least 3 meetings a day there, make cookies for those people there, whatever. But you go to AA and you wash dishes. Mom's lost your dad. You help her change light bulbs. You do laundry. No bragging about AA. You're not there yet. You know, and we don't want you to go in there and be doing that kind of no apologies. You don't even know what you're sorry for, and you're sorry for a lot. So, you know, they'll have to figure it out. Well, shut up, you know. And so I went up there. I'm a big family. I have a lot of dishes to do. But I went up there and I went to their meetings, and I did exactly what she said. I did that every single time I saw my family until it was time to make amends. And then I sat down and made those amends. Yeah, made amends to, you know, both my ex-mother-in-laws, who's, you know, one of my put her son in jail, you know, they'd had to, you know, bail bond their house to get him out. And went back and made everything that I was supposed to do, you know. And my son came along. I hadn't filed a tax return for like 8 years, you know, and I had been in the middle of a workman's comp case that I couldn't even show up for. I would show up at the workman's comp case and they'd ask me a question and be like, all tweaked out on speed. And they would be like reporting me for like 8 hours, you know, she says. And so, you know, I filed my tax return. I had a refund coming for like 8 years, you know? And then they settled that workman's comp case and they sent me that. And I bought a little condo down in San Clemente. I didn't call anybody in my family to help me move it, my ex-husband, anything. And they're like, oh my God, you know. And what happened was my son came into AA about 3 years later. My husband, 3 years, but he knocked on my door and asked me to start dating. And my sponsor said to me, I needed to go back and get a job. I'm like, I'm on permanent disability. I can just be like a forever AA person. And she's like, no, you're not disabled anymore. And so I went and school after school after school. I don't know what to say, like where I've been for 6 years, you know. Yes, I was teacher of the year, and yes, I met the president, but I was a drunk during that time. Then I became a tweaker. Now I'm in AA. We're good workers. I think he would want me, you know. But eventually I got hired, and I got hired as a math teacher, and I had like 18 months to go back and get a degree in that area. I'm like, I hate math, you know, but that's not what happened. What happened was I went to Cal State Fullerton and I ended up getting a master's degree in math. And I'll never forget, I was the secretary at the Newport Club. So I was getting up in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, all dressed to be the secretary that night, go teach school all day long, then drive over to Cal State Fullerton, take two classes, then jump in my car, drive to the Newport Club, be the secretary. And I'm complaining to somebody there, oh my God, I get up 5 in the morning and da, 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 da. And I don't get home until 11 o'clock at night. And the guy goes, thank God they made you secretary, because you probably would have left once all the blessings were coming back to you. But you had commitments in your meeting and it's keeping you here because this is what got you all the things that you're complaining about. And I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have looked at it that way. You know? And so what happened was, you know, our family got back together and I had a couple of grandkids by that point. They moved in with us. My son moved in with us and he had a bout and he got sober in AA. And about 9 years ago, my son started getting these real horrible tremors. We didn't know what they were. He had met a gal, moved in with her, and they had had a baby, and his little daughter was just about 2 years old. And it turned out that he, his liver had burst. He had what's called Wilson's disease. When we eat like food or things like that, we get like arsenic and copper and iron and all that kind of stuff in us. And we have parts of our body that are supposed to like take out what you don't need. And he didn't have the proteins that took the copper out. So it had built up in his liver and it burst and he was in heavy metal poisoning. And where we fought for his life, but he did not make it. His daughter turned 2 and he died the next day. And, you know, that was a hard thing to walk through in sobriety. He had about 10 years. I had 15 years. He had this little tiny baby and his gal moved back to Minnesota and took my granddaughter with her. I'm like, no, 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 no. You know, but I look at the people here, Jackie and Lauren, you know, I mean, we sat in that hospital. My son was an organ donor. So we sat there for about a week and all the people of AA sat there with us. I mean, I don't want to talk about what it's like to lose a child because that would be a whole. You know, one thing I did learn when I lost him was I came to AA and I'm like, AA made me feel better before, but that AA is not a grief group. And there were people in AA that took me to a grief group. And I learned in that grief group, when I walked in there, I knew those people had lost their children. By walking in that room, I could feel it. Just like when I walked in AA, I knew there were drunks in this room by the way that they felt there. So AA was there to keep me sober during that time and to recommend, hey, why don't I go to a grief group with a couple of them? And that grief group was there to take care of that. I learned a lot about identification and, you know, primary purpose. And I'm glad both those groups had their primary purpose. And they sat in the hospital. We Patrick, I don't know, they took like everything from him, you know, and AA came and walked down the hallway with us, even the operating room. And he said, you'll see white helicopters going everywhere, and that's your son saving lives. We've met some of those people that have his organs. And, you know, thank God for AA, because we stayed so close with his mom. You know, my little granddaughter is living in Minnesota, and there's like with some bad feelings there, but I was like, That little girl's important, you know. And his mom and I were very close. She's been remarried. We've been to that wedding. They have two other kids. I'm grandmother to all of those children, and they fly back and forth here. And one day, my first husband, my second husband, and Patrick's ex-wife's new husband, all went, no, baby. And the fourth guy was happy to all know each other. And they're all like, oh, I used to be married to her wife. I'm still married. And finally, my husband said, you know what? We all love you. And, you know, we learned that from AA. My family learned that. You know, I mean, we all love AA, don't we? So we always put AA first. We put it first. And we love that little girl. And we put that first. Our family is a tight-knit, blended group, you know. And all the girls know because they've been to our house. They've met them all. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. And it's been a long road. But, you know, the summer after my son died, I went across country with my two oldest grandkids. My first grandkid I wasn't allowed to meet because I was drunk as a skunk when she was born. And I wasn't allowed to meet her. My second, my grandson, I got to meet because I was 3 months sober, you know. So I always kind of timed my sobriety by that. And they were, my son was like 18, 19 when he had him. So the two kids raised him, you know, and they were just beside themselves with losing their Uncle Patrick. And I thought, you know what? All your life, you poured everything into a drink, a bar, used a drug. This is your family, and you need to, like, grow up. You know, you need to make sure that your family doesn't fall apart from this. Be sober and be the leader and, you know, sit together and tell them, hey, we're going to make it as a family. And we have, and I'm really proud of my family. We have Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for that, because I would have never, ever, ever, you know, I can't even imagine. I ended up teaching another 20 years. I've got a master's degree in math. That was one of the last things my mom got to see me do. I already called my sponsor, who cares what X is? She'd be like, you do your jobs, I'm dependent on it, you know? And then I just realized that, like, math was hard. I had to do the homework. I had to do the footwork. Like AA, sobriety is not easy. It's not easy. I mean, the hardest thing probably when my son passed away was I was completely sober to it. I had to feel all of my feelings during that time. I didn't get to take a drink or a drug or an antidepressant or something like that. I had to walk through it and be sober. And I'm grateful for that. You know, I've been through my dad's death. I was on somebody's lawn trying, stalking them. You know, that's how I handled my dad's death, you know. And I feel like, you know, Patrick really is super proud of his mom, you know. And I ended up retiring from teaching, you know, had two knee replacements. I did not want to, the girls will tell you, I was walking around like a year on a walker. I did not want to have that knee surgery. I was terrified of those pain medications. I just lost my son. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be stuck in this bed on medication, you know, going through grief. And that didn't happen. Like, we're everywhere. You find out when you have surgery, like, oh my God, you know, there's somebody at your house all the time, and they sit with you and they make sure that you go through it. I can walk again. I ski. I do all sorts of stuff. I finally decided that knee surgery was my granddaughter. Goes, oh, you're so old, Grandma. I'm like, why do you think I'm old? She goes, you're on a walker. I go, not anymore. But I don't know. So those of you that are new or had a crazy life, I mean, what a gift it is that we get to come in here. I remember seeing this reading over and over again, the promises, we will not regret the past. I'm like, how will that happen? How will I not regret, like, not getting sober when my dad passed away, or all the things that I lost, or my house foreclosing? But you get to come here, you get to sit with ladies, like the ladies I see in the front row here that I went through my sobriety and got to share my story with, and I've watched them come through and I've watched them get sober. Your story becomes your greatest asset, really. You can say to people, I did that. I was drunk when my dad died. Yeah, I was in jail. I was in jail when I was a school teacher, you know, that was pretty embarrassing, you know. I mean, I did all that kind of stuff, you know, and I made it. And I didn't think that would happen when I came to AA. I was like, oh my God, look at this messy life. Like, take it, you know? And we're like, we're not going to look at the messy life. You're going to look at yourself, you know? And I think one of the biggest lessons I learned in AA was, in any conflict or anything, I'm a part of it. You know, if I'm there, I'm a part of it. And if I can look at what my part is, no matter how hard I have to dig for it, I can change me. And once I'm concentrated on changing me, I don't really care what you're doing. You know, usually you change too, or the situation changes, or we make a decision that's in the right direction. But I can't make a decision in any direction until I can get focused on what I'm doing. And what am I doing to help somebody else? And my husband, you know, he's we just celebrated 37 years of sobriety. I'm not sobriety, 37 years of marriage. I have celebrated 25 years of sobriety. We have a big AA home, you know, with lots of potlucks and the girls at our house. And he never questions when I go to an AA meeting. He is very grateful that my meetings are on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, because apparently those are football nights. I didn't even know that. But he was telling somebody, oh, I'm super lucky. Look at her meeting schedule. You know? I stayed home one night for my Monday night meeting. Yeah, I'm here. He's like, oh, darn it. But, you know, we have 8 grandkids. We live a really good life. It's peaceful. It's kind. And, you know, I never, ever, ever have ever, my husband lived it. You know, he's like, there's somebody on the phone, go answer it. You know, and I'm so grateful that I live with something like that, that he knows that he got a miracle. So I thank you so much for having Lauren and I here on a Sunday night. I just, you know, I love all these girls so much. And I feel like I've been given the miracle to come in and see their transformation. That's what you get to see. And you get to see it over and over and over again. I remember one time my husband and I sober, we went to the church and I'm like, they saying the same things that they say in AA. He goes, I think they all said that in church tradition. We're just like kind of hung over, you know. But I think that I did find in AA, maybe what people were looking for in church or somewhere else. I found a higher power. I found a purpose. You know, who knew we would find a purpose out of that messy life, you know? And I found a way to give it away and to be a useful member of society. So thank you so much for having us here on a Sunday night. Thank you for my support.